in Pensacola, Florida. Well, live on January 8th, 2004, anyway. If it's a different date than 2004, January 8th, hopefully I'm still alive, and you are, obviously, because you're listening, but the program is being re-aired for whatever reason. We always tell folks where we stand. I'm an evangelist. I do seminars on creation, evolution, and dinosaurs. I speak, let's see, about a little over 800, almost 900 times last year. And we just figured up the year's damage we did, and it's been a busy year. I do seminars on creation, evolution. We take the position the Bible is literally true, scientifically accurate. The world was created in six literal 24-hour days about 6,000 years ago. The whole universe was created, not just the world. And God made it all, and the world was destroyed by a big flood in the days of Noah 4,400 years ago, roughly. And before the flood, dinosaurs lived with people. They called them dragons, probably. Noah took dinosaurs on the ark, and probably babies, just to be smart enough to bring a pink one and a blue one. And then people killed most of them through history, and there could be a few stragglers still alive. That's basically the creation view in a nutshell. Then we believe the evolution theory that's currently being taught in our schools is one of the dumbest and most dangerous religions in the history of humanity. It didn't happen. None of it's true. No dog ever produced a non-dog, nor did a dog come from a non-dog. If anybody wants to believe they did, well, that's just great. You enjoy yourself. You believe whatever you want. But don't call it science. And don't make me pay to have that taught to the kids in the schools. That is not science. Okay. If you want to call in and be on the program, we would love to have you come. Skeptics or supporters or just interested neutral parties, anybody's welcome to call in. Call our office, 877. It's toll-free. 877-479 Dino. You guys sit over there, we can pack in a live call if somebody calls. Okay. Yeah. Got both brains on the subject this time, right? You guys can handle it. Jonathan stands around and Derek's the brains on the PA system. Okay. All right, Derek, well, we'll see if it works. Call in and test out. See if Derek's system here works. We've got a zillion wires running all over the place. Call at 877-479-DINO. That's or 850 if you want to make a call. 479-DINO. We'll be glad to take your call. You can also call that number during the day and order any of our materials or get our free book we send out to radio listeners. It says, are you being brainwashed by your science book? Just ask for the brainwashed book. And if you're being taught evolution is true, you definitely are being brainwashed. You don't want to fall for that. So that's what we're here for. We're here to help. And Jonathan, if the atheists call in, we can help, right? We have the technology. Your mic's not working.
I think it's like, okay, it's barely working.
Barely working.
Derek, he's the genius. He's going to fix it all. Okay. Okay. All right. You guys can hear me now. Atheist, I don't know if we can help him.
Well, we can try.
I know, according to testimonies and the devotions that we have, you have helped thousands and thousands upon thousands and even more thousands.
But there's still more.
There's a lot more out there. So
it's like when they say something's idiot-proof, you know, they're always making better idiots.
Yeah, usually the ones that have seen the seminar with an open mind and are actually looking, you know, for truth are the ones that get helped. The ones who haven't seen them usually don't get helped.
But yeah, they complain. You know, they hear us. Have you seen it? No. Okay. Well, I'm not sure I can help you. Okay. All right, let me read a few testimonies. That'll take some questions if you want to email it instantly.
If you're open. We have one of your former students on line one. Would you like them on?
A former student.
A former student.
I taught for 15 years, so there would be several thousand people who would qualify for that category. But yes. Put them on. I can't hear it. Right? Do I have these headphones here? Okay, I don't have a headphone. Got it.
Hello, we have Rich on line one. Go ahead.
This is Dr. Holman, this is Rich. I was one of your students in California.
Richard Chanley?
Yes, sir.
Oh, you've got to be kidding. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. I looked on your website and found out you're on the radio and listened to it on my computer. So I had a question for you. Okay. And I thought I might want to discuss on the air. I've been a science teacher and taught science, and mostly because of your influence, like I like to use your teaching style in the classroom.
That could be good or bad.
Yeah. I'll show your videos and everything. And
let me ask you a question.
Sure.
When you were taking my science class, did you learn anything?
I learned a lot. Didn't remember a whole lot, but that was my fault. but no, I did. I learned a lot. And one of the things that when I refer to your teaching style, your teaching style made learning fun. And especially it got me interested in science to learn without being boring. And teaching teenagers in high school, you need that capability. So, yeah, I did. lot, and in fact, that kind of goes to my question. I have taught earth science, life science, those things, and have experienced sometimes where you have, I'm trying to teach the kids that science is not the enemy of the truth, meaning, the gospel and those kinds of things, and vice versa.
Right.
True science. And have you experienced, because obviously you fight against evolution, which is not the truth, and have to deal with that. And I think part of the animosity that you get from someone who, on the face of it, doesn't have an open mind, they think, well, you're just trying to destroy science, and that's not, I know that's not the truth. With you, but how do you deal with that on both sides of the issue? Because I'm sure you've encountered, say, people who think, well, you're just naming your religion because you're trying to, inject science into religion. They don't mix. Well, they do if they're both true, But
right.
How do you deal with that?
Well, I get that almost every week, and people say, well, you're against science. I say, no. I say the problem is you're confusing evolution with science. The Bible and science do not have a conflict. The Bible and evolution have a conflict. But see, evolution is not part of science. So you always, 10 times during the debate, I'll have to remind the guy I'm debating, or woman, evolution is not part of science. I like science, but evolution is not part of it. So they're always confusing. I tell people, beer is sold at football games. Beer has nothing to do with football.
Right.
And beer does not become athletic by association. You may think it's part of science, but evolution is not. And they're continually mixing evolution in with science, and people think it's part of science because it's so thoroughly mixed together.
Right.
But if you just constantly stay on top of the distinction, and they'll say, you're just against science. I say, no, I'm against evolution. I love science.
Right.
And so I agree, and, good to hear you're teaching. That's great.
Yeah, what about on the other side when you have people that, for instance, I've been fascinated by, I know some say people who will say, well, dinosaurs have evolution. Well, it's not. And you told me to turn on the evolution side, how you insist, well, no, science.
Well, it's the same thing on the Christian. A person can be a Christian and still think that evolution goes with science.
Right.
So it's the same confusion, just from a Christian perspective now. I say, no, you're confusing. You're thinking, you have science, which is knowledge we've gained by observation. You have the Bible, which is knowledge gained by revelation.
Mm-hmm.
And you have evolution, which is a pure religion people believe in.
Right.
And some people think that there's a war. Well, there is a war between the Bible and evolution. There is not a war between the Bible and science.
They're also scientists, so they can, say they're on the higher moral ground. So just well, they don't believe in war.
Many scientists may also have a religion. Called evolution. But the fact that a scientist has a religion does not mean the religion is part of the science.
Right. Well, part of the thing that came up with the question was, I was watching your video and you were debating a gentleman, and he said, personally, no scientific method, observation, experimentation, hypothesis. And he made a comment, and it started me thinking, because I've never been in a public school, I've never been in a public college. So maybe they've redefined terms so they can get around that scientific method. He said something about the scientific method. You have to make it disprovable.
Falsifiable, right.
Falsifiable. What have they in the schools started some kind of redefining of the scientific method to kind of get around and be able to teach evolution without embarrassing themselves?
Yes, I believe that they're trying to redefine science. If you look it up in any dictionary, especially 100 years ago, science is knowledge gained by observations, experimentation, or testing. Evolution is none of those.
Right.
Technically, neither is creation.
Right.
Yeah, and I tell them, I can't prove creation scientifically, and you can't prove evolution.
Right.
And they say, what's the big deal then? I say, well, it's real simple. Why am I paying for your religion to be taught?
Right, exactly.
Now, Richard, I hear kids in the background. Don't tell me you ran off and got married.
Yes, sir. I have 4 children.
4 kids.
I'm contributing to the dilution of the gene pool.
Doctor, what grade was this that you got? Richard, you were in my class. What?
I was one of those 7th graders. You were so hard on them.
7th graders.
Yeah, you didn't really have a whole lot of affinity for 7th graders. You called us all kinds of names, but it was in good fun.
Oh, man.
I, teacher, math teacher of math and science, I think. And that's what I've taught the last 2 years, math and science.
Well, I got a good math question for you.
Okay.
This was given to me 2 days ago. I couldn't solve it.
Okay.
The guy said, Mr. Hoffman, I have 3 kids. Half of them are boys.
Half of them are boys.
I have 3 kids, and half of them are boys. I thought, I couldn't solve it. When he told me the answer, I nearly kicked myself.
Is one of them hermaphrodite?
No.
Half of them are boys.
It's real simple.
Half of them boys.
The other half are boys, too.
Ah, there you go.
See?
There you go.
There's a good math. I couldn't get it. I kicked myself.
This is great. What state are you in?
I'm in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
I'm sorry to hear about that.
Well, it's not sunny California, but when God calls you somewhere, you gotta go.
Does your mom ever grow any? Is she any taller?
No, she's the same short lady that the Joe's was, and just as spicy as ever.
Oh,
she's got a big right cross, and I only backed doctor once when I was about that age and haven't done it since. Yes, sir. She and my father are still in California, and they're doing well.
Now she's less than 5 feet tall, and he's well over 6 feet, right?
Oh, no, sir, I'm 5'7".
No,
I inherited my mother's genes. My brother's taller than me.
But
they're about 5'9".
Yeah, it's your mom and dad. What's it?
My father is over 6 foot, yeah.
And your mom's less than 5 or more?
Yes. Yeah, she's about 5'1", I think. She's real short.
Amen. All right. Well, tell him I said hi.
I will. It was good hearing you. I'm going to keep listening to you in the afternoon, so they come out about 5 to 6 out here. So.
Yep. Sounds great. Hey, thanks a lot, Brett.
All right, Brett. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Well, that's great. Here from Richard Chamblee and his brother, Jeff. I had them a long time ago in school. That's good. Okay, folks, if you want to call me on the program, we'd love to hear from you. 877-479-DINO. 877-479-3466. Or go to our website, drdino.com, or you can AOL instant message us, our screen name, Dr. Dino Live. We've got a few minutes for the break, and we read some testimonies here. Here's one from Christina, who writes in from, time for the break. There is no break. Oh, don't worry, why don't you just keep going?
We are completely break-free now.
Breakless.
We're going free from the breaks.
So, now, Bill, we fixed him up with Ruth, they got married and have 3 kids. And
they got married after 3 weeks, and then
my wife and I knew they were perfect for each other. I think they were in their mid-20s. I mean, by then you can make a decision.
Yeah.
He said before he met her, he was ruthless. That's Bill for you. His wife's named Ruth, anyway. Okay. That's Bill. He's one of the most talented guys I've ever seen. He knows how to do everything. Good thing he's working here on our staff. Okay. Here's one from Christina, who says, the one thing that gets me on fire and always brings me back to the Lord is debating the theory of evolution and sharing creation with non-believers. I had been saved years before being introduced to Kent Hovind, but a dear friend of mine said the salvation prayer along with Kent at the end of one of his DVDs. I'm forever thankful to Kent and him sacrificing his life to travel around the world. He truly has a vital message and a gift from God to spread it like wildfire. The least I can do is to continue to burn his DVDs and send them out to all who question God's glory. Thank you, Kent. Well, Christina, thank you so much. That's tremendous. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Here's one with a frowny face on it. Uh-oh. I know what that means. When read it with a frowny face, sit down, buckle up, hang on. This is from Ben Ream, R-E-A-M. So, Ben, if you're listening, I will read it. If I make a mistake, you call in. Catch me on it. Okay, I try to be accurate here. Ben writes in, just a quick comment. By the way, I've not seen any of these, so I opened the folder, which was about 10 seconds ago. Just a quick comment. The following is a response I received from a university professor when requesting a list of reasons why creationists are ignorant. I am so sorry that creationists refuse to use their brains and can only flee into Iron Age mythologies that make them feel safe and comfortable. The library of full of books that would help them. I think you meant the library is full of books. That's okay. Okay, I understand. You believe in evolution. You might need a little help on spelling, too. Or grammar or logic or whatever. Okay. He says, the library of full of books that would help. If only they would have the heart or mind to see beyond the simplistic brainwashing that was drummed into their youthful, impressionistic minds.
By and large, creationists and others follow the mind-numbing religions or religious rules that were drilled into them at a young age. It is also a wonderful way to get people to fly jets into tall buildings. I feel sorry for such fools. A true university education can give one the wisdom to open one's mind to the magnificence of evolutionary reality. Take the classes and open your mind. I suspect that you are only interested in the religious cant, however. Am I correct? He is a geology professor at Dr. Open's Arbor in Omaha area. I would love to try to schedule a debate. Ben Rain. Okay, well, Ben, I don't know if this is the geology professor's comments or if this is also your sentiments. I will assume this is just the geology professor at Omaha. I have been, let's see, I've been standing with my map here. I got pins in the map where I've been. Omaha. No, I've been to North Platte, Lincoln. Yeah, I've been spoken Omaha. Let's see, what year was that? Redfin, 96. It's been a while. Okay, I'll be glad to come back. You tell the professor, Ben, I will come at my expense to Omaha to debate him in front of the university. I will also pay him $200 if he will debate me for at least 2 hours. And if he can prove the evolution theory is true, I will pay him $250,000 in unmarked bills. Not sure they're marked. They're all Federal Reserve notes, you know. Frauds, but
I'll even throw in a dollar of my own.
And Jonathan will throw in a dollar. $201.
Exactly. Based on my check, they would know how much, you know, this, I'm like that little woman in the Bible. You know,
oh, I don't want to hear about this, Jonathan. Come on, you've been working here for, you're way overpaid.
No, I know. We are working for the Lord, and the Lord does not ever have financial problems. He takes care of his children. So.
Ah, you're a great blessing, Jonathan. Okay, so Ben, tell your professor what he's just done here with him saying that creationists are ignorant and in the Iron Age and mind-numbing religious rules. All he's done is seventh grade name calling. there's not a common sense scientific thought in his whole comment here.
Now, did he address any of the creation arguments in there?
Yeah, they never address any of the specific arguments. It's always a generic. But you should take a class and learn about evolution and be smart like me.
That's crazy. I mean, you have you taught high school. We just had one of your students actually call in. So exactly. And you've been on the subject for 15 years. So I would assume that you know, I mean,
I know a little bit about it.
Yeah, I think you'd know, you know, enough to get your stories right.
So plus this is what's called a generic charge. This, it's generic. The professor says you're dumb. How do you defend against that? You know, there's nothing in here you can fight against. You can't put your teeth in anything.
So they tell my rubber in your glue. That's about the same tactic.
That's down to the grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, you know. My daddy can beat up your daddy. Okay, well, Ben, I would be honored to come to Omaha. I will debate the entire science faculty on two simple conditions. I get half the time, number one. If there's 20 of them and one of me, honestly, that's perfectly fine. I'll take on the entire science faculty, but I get half the time. Number two, we talk about one topic at a time. I don't want them getting up, giving 20, you know, statements, and I have time to respond to three of them, because then it looks like they had 17 points I couldn't answer. There is no scientific evidence for evolution. Evolution is one of the dumbest religions in the history of the world. I taught her science for 15 years, and this guy you say is a geology professor. Well, we will make the debate. I'll tell you what. The debate that I have is titled, Does Geology Support Evolution? I believe it's debate number 5, if I'm mistaken. It is really dated. It's from like 10 years ago. I would love to replace it. Okay? So because I need to replace a debate with a geology professor, it's just really old and I'd like to get more information in there, I will pay him $300 plus come at my expense and debate him in front of the whole university. Okay? I do not get involved in email debates. I don't even read my own email. Okay? I don't have time. They should follow around in our shoes for a while here, John, and see. There isn't time to do much of anything around here other than just keep up with the hectic schedule we have. So I'm not about to get into an email debate or internet debate with anybody. Call up the radio program or come offline at my expense. It'd like to be midweek. My weekends are full for the next 4,000 years. Actually, I have, I think, 3 openings this year for churches if somebody wants to call.
And you actually also do call-in deals with the entire class, don't you?
Yeah. If you want to set up a PA system at the class, call in where I can answer questions live over the whole class, you know, just so that somebody monitors it who's fair and unbiased and impartial so that they don't shut off my mic and not give me a chance to respond, you know. I did a debate one time with Eugene Virginia Scott. She's the president of the National Center for Science Education in Berkeley, California. The National Center, which has an incredible impact on schools, their whole purpose is to keep creation out of schools and keep evolution in. And Eugenie Scott, the debate was 30 minutes. I believe I got to speak for 3 minutes of the 30. I have it all on radio, on tape, or radio debate. So that was totally unfair. I tried to be a gentleman, assuming she was going to be a lady. And she just, you know, monopolized all the time.
Eugenie Scott.
Eugenie Scott, yeah. So Eugenie, or let's see, who's the guy that came to the, when I spoke in Berkeley? I'm going back to Berkeley. Is it next month? You check the itinerary. I go back. I'm going back to Berkeley soon, and Eugenie Scott's National Center, which is a little, you know, storefront building about, I think there are 5 people working there, and they claim to be a huge name, you know, little storefront building.
Are you going to go visit them?
I did.
Did you
know myself out there?
I heard about them taking a piece of tape and putting a little Ken Hovind Hollywood Square down on their tower floor.
Ken Hovind stood here.
Well, I see this time you have a brand new cell phone with a camera in it, so you can take pictures of their reactions when you walk in. And then email them directly to me. That's the new Altel, whatever that thing is.
I'm going to get all their buttons down. You're going to teach me all that.
All right.
Just got to run. I don't know how to run this phone. There's $20 more for the camera. There's a broken dog. I'll get the camera. This is what I need is something else to learn. Okay. Anyway, let's see. Ben, tell your geology professor, please, I would be honored to come. I do want to have a couple more conditions. One condition would be I want to be able to videotape the debate. Both of us, the professor and myself, will get a master copy, and we can do with it as we please, other than edit out or edit in things, except for intros and closings. If he wants to put an intro and closing on there and say, hello, I'm Ben, I'm a geology professor, here's the debate with Ken Hovind, you know, or that's all I did on my debates. I put an intro and outro. On one debate, there were only one of them I've done. There were so many things left unanswered. We edited in comments in the middle of the debate. Other things, because it was one of those where we didn't have the condition, you know, one topic at a time. So they gave 10 topics. I answered 3. And it looked like I wasn't answering in the 7, so we decided to go ahead and edit in comments just to make it more fair. Okay, so Ben, count me in, please. Tell the professor, hey, Hovind will come. And Ben, if he won't come, email Jonathan at drdino.com. And we will add his name to the ever-growing list of professors who have refused to debate.
Over 500 names right now. There's about 350 on the website, and a student just now sent a mass email to every professor at his college, invited them all, they all declined, and he sent me an entire list, over 150 names.
Yay.
So, one student did this. Just anybody out there, you should do that also. Email everybody at your college.
Now, before we started keeping track, we just started that list. Since you've been here, right?
Yeah, just recently.
Okay. I had over 3,000 before that. But I didn't write all the names down. I just kept the checklist, you know, how many, you know, this who didn't debate, who refused to debate. So it would be thousands and thousands on there who just refused to debate.
That was a very large page.
They want to talk in front of their class about evolution and make on a creation. Of course, in front of their class, they have an academic advantage. They're given the kind of grade, you know, he doesn't want to say, teacher, you're lying, you're wrong. He's going to mark his grade down. And he says, teacher has a psychological advantage. So it's totally, totally unfair. So they don't have any thumbs on me. They can't scare me. They can't hurt me. Hey, invite me to come. Be honored to come. And it's very sweet Christian love. I will demolish their little theory of evolution.
Well, you have Elijah and the prophets of Baal. You know, this, someone's going to have to do something to open someone's eyes. So if you have to destroy these, you know, big images to open up the eyes of their followers,
hold on fire.
So be it. You know?
Have you read that story, Elijah and the prophets of Baal?
Yeah.
You know, that's where rock music was invented.
Remember?
They were dancing around, come on, Baal, light my fire.
I have no idea where you come up with this.
Okay, here's one from Linda Howe, H-O-W-E. Linda Howe writes in, we are a homeschooling family in Birmingham, Alabama. Mr. Simmons, a patient of my husband's, gave us a copy of your videotapes. He smiled and put them away. We do unit studies, and the children wanted to study dinosaurs. I decided to include creation and evolution in the study for the older kids. I pulled out the videos, and we started watching them. I was amazed at the research and thought that went into these tapes. We love them. I now want to share them with everyone I know. They make so much sense, and I love how you include creation for Christian truths and how to become a Christian in each video. I now would love to meet you and come see you and have my children meet you. If you're ever in Birmingham, Alabama, please come stay with my family. You're welcome anytime. Thank you so much for what you're doing. I want to support you in some way. but need to talk to my husband to see how we can best do this. I'm so impressed and so thankful for you. I will be supporting you with prayer. Thank you again. My kids are learning tons. Feel free to contact me. Sincerely, Linda. Well, Linda, thank you so much. That is tremendous. I appreciate that. And since you're in Birmingham, depending on how fast you drive, you're about 4.5 hours from Pensacola. Just come on down. Come visit our dinosaur adventure land. Straight down 65. You're off on exit, exit 69 in Alabama and go south to Pensacola. I've done the trip a few billion times. So we'd love to have you come down. Okay, we have a AOL instant message here in my hand. And then we'll get into the radio questions that have been sent to us. Jonathan, I didn't get any of these yesterday in the folder, I don't think.
Yesterday? No, you didn't get any of these. We did about Dan and I, Dan from the park, which is one of the goofiest guys around here. He and I did it yesterday. We got about 3 of the testimonies read and probably 6 or 7 of the questions. So.
Okay, well, you got something done.
Yeah.
That's not worth a raise, but that's just it. Okay, Lord is Risen 2003. Hello, Dr. Owen. Do you think that you might can make a seminar series for Sunday schools age 15 to 30 and so on with a class book and a teacher book? God bless. Lord is Risen 2003. Well, it just so happens that we have been working diligently on our workbook to go along with my seminar notebook. The seminar notebook is all kinds of interesting miscellaneous, you know, things to add for the seminar. The seminar workbook will be just exactly what you're looking for. Fill in the blank. Did you ask Dan about that? He was supposed to finish that over Christmas.
I know he's cornering, doing the edges of it right now. But yeah, that'll be pretty awesome. That's exactly what you're doing, basically, on a Wednesday evening at a Marcus Point Baptist Church here in Pensacola. So if anybody is actually near Pensacola, you ought to come by and see the Creation Science Hour, basically, at the church. Now, we also have the CSU 101, 102, 103, 104 courses also on the website, drgovernor.com. And that's basically what you're doing out there, if I'm not mistaken. I know I've already been to the project and everything. So we're actually redoing all of our college courses on the CSU 101, 102, 103, 104. We're actually redoing all of those every Wednesday night at Marcus Point Baptist Church here in Pensacola, Florida. So if anybody is anywhere near, you should actually come and check that out. And we are actually working on making that a new product. So, to answer your question, yes, that is exactly what we're doing.
All right, yeah, sort of an area model where the class starting next Wednesday night, every Wednesday night for the next 400 years, I'll be teaching live at Marcus Point.
That's right. You're actually going. It does look about 400. This is the entire seminar, but slowed down and put into about 90 hours or something.
Chase every rabbit, kick every dog. Yeah, right, amen. And this week I'll be preaching up in central Missouri. Do you know anybody up in Missouri? I'm going to be in Osage, Missouri. I'm looking at a map. Osage Beach is from Jefferson City, which is dead center of the capital. You go southwest, I'm going to pick a number and guess about 40 miles to Osage Beach, Missouri. And that's where I'll be this weekend. If you want to come, we'd be glad to have you. Here comes Dan, speak of the devil. We're just going up the devil. We're just talking about the seminar notebook or workbook. Somebody wanted that. How close is that, Dan? You're just going to print up some pages right now. So you need this network line. We can't have this network line. Here's Eric's. If you want to pull it back behind his desk over there, you can plug in his network again. Okay, here we go. Steve Fletcher writes in. Dr. Coben, what do scientists mean when they talk about physico-chemical system being closed, P-H-Y-S-I-C-O, physico-chemical system being closed, parent-daughter relationships of in the decay of radioactive minerals. I've been doing a little research on this, but a lot of it is over my head. Could you please help out, since I'm in a debate with a supposed scientist over the internet? Thanks, love your work, Steve. Okay, Steve, what they're talking about here with a system being closed, let's take something like uranium slowly decays and turns into lead. It takes a long time for this to happen. I mean, like a long time. Okay. Obviously, we assume it takes a long time. What they do is they take a sample of uranium and test it and see how many molecules break apart or decay in, you know, 3 days. Let's suppose you got 4 gazillion molecules and 80 of them decay in 3 days. Then you extrapolate and find out how many would decay in 1,000 days and in, you know, 1,000 years and in 1,000,000 years. So it's an extrapolation based on a, you know, a relatively short test. Radioactive dating wasn't even developed until the 1940s and 50s. So it's not like we've had 4 billion years to watch this happen. The assumption is that the decay rate that we're currently observing is what it has always been. And I won't argue with that. I will just point out that it is indeed an assumption. So they're talking about a system being closed, meaning there nothing else can get in and nothing else can leak out of the system. So you have, we'll make the number simpler, you have 1,000 molecules of uranium, and they're going to slowly decay to lead. You are assuming, of course, that no new molecules of uranium are being added, and none of the lead molecules can escape from the system in a rock or something. None of them can get in or out. That's what's called a closed system. I don't think there's any possible way to prove that it's a closed system. They can certainly believe that if they want, but they are indeed just, you know, believing it. Parent-daughter relationships of decay radioactive materials you mentioned here. I cover that on video number 7. If you go to the website, Dr. Dino, that's D-R-D-I-N-O, you will find, is it FAQ, Jonathan, about carbon dating? Or watch the video right there. Did we get the less grainy one up?
We're actually, the larger videos we're working on right now, can Andrew and I need to do a few slides, and that will be up this week or next week. Probably this weekend, actually.
Okay. Because you're working half days now, aren't you?
I'm working half days. You know, 12 hours.
12 hours a day, if that's half day.
You finally convinced me to do it, and you get a lot of work done, so.
I learned years ago, if you burn the candle at both ends, you get twice the light.
For half as long.
Yeah, for half as long. I'll be 51 next week. Do I look like I'm burned out?
No, not yet.
Actually, I'd rather burn out than rust out. Yeah, any day. A lot of people that save them energy. Forget it, man. Use it. That's what God gives you for. He'll give you more if you need it. Okay, so, Steve, hope that helps. Feel free to call into the program, Creation Science, our website, drdino.com, or Dr. Dino Live.
Now, look at that. See, you are getting burnt out. You're starting to forget your own website for 15 years.
And that's how I'm looking at time. I see creationscience.com. That's Will Brown's website, so it confused me now. I just believe it's
in the Will Brown. He's a good guy, too.
He's a good guy, too. Yeah. Not as good as ours. He's really good. Okay. All right. Here we go. Hellbound No More writes in. Again. And written many times. Thank you so much for listening. He writes in, Hello, Roman. You have a great ministry, and I pray that the Lord Jesus Christ will bless it beyond anything you have ever seen. My question is, I have been watching the news lately. Oh, mistake number one. That's mistake number one. I wouldn't press anything those guys say. But if they say it's raining, I'll go out and check.
We check our weather rock.
We have the weather rock.
If the weather rock is wet, it's raining.
If it's moving,
it's windy.
If it's bouncing up and down,
it's a hurricane.
Yeah, hurricane. If it's gone, hurricane. Now, I'm saying accurate under the minute weather forecasting. Our weather rock, you got to come to the Nice River to see that thing. It's incredible. We've never found it to be wrong. Perfect. And it predicts like 40 different things, too.
Yeah, we have the entire sign up. We're going to have to, you know, patent that bit on the website.
We're going to make miniature versions of that sign in the bookstore for those who want their own weather rock.
You can hang it off their finger or something, you know, just pull it out of
our desk. Yeah, look at that. Okay. He says, I've been watching the news lately and have been seeing a trend to say that Christianity is evil and bad, but every other world religion is all right. But now I have heard that major players in the European Union have been attacked by letter bombs. I have a weird feeling that they will in some way blame it on Christians somehow. That's the way the world is going. So we know the Lord is ever even close. Can't wait to meet you in heaven, your brother in Christ, right? Okay, Mike, good observation, and I believe you're correct. You know, when Nero wanted to build a new city, rebuild the city of Rome, now you burn it down and you blame it on the Christians. Of course, when Hitler wanted to take over, he burned or blew up the Reichstag and then blamed it on his enemies. This has been a technique used for thousands of years. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they start blaming the Christians for everything because we're intolerant. We believe we're right. Actually, we know we're right. So, real simple. No one that's right on everything is me, of course, right now. You have to agree with this. Not right, your paycheck, you know.
Well, yeah, I know, but you're still a good guy.
Okay, you're right. Well, here's one from Linda, D-D-E, capital W-E-T, DeWitt. Linda writes in, hi, thank you for the opportunity to ask you a question which bothers me. I gave someone at work, unsaved, his name is Stephen, some things to read on creation evolution. He agrees with some of the things you say, but unfortunately, as with so many people, he believes that continental drift exists and explains something about the fact that the continents are almost liquid-like or plastic at the foundation causing the drift. What is the science behind this that hasn't been proved? And what does the Bible say? He would, of course, prefer scientific-based evidence of this. I hope you can help. Thank you. Yours in Christ, Linda. Well, Linda, thank you so much for writing. It is true that where the solid part of the continent called the crust meets the liquid part, there's not an instant line, it's not a line there. It's a distinction between the solid and the liquid. It's called the Moho-Ravisic discontinuity. I called it after a guy named Moho-Ravisic. So project Moho is for short. Is the project to drill a hole down and find out where does it change from solid to liquid. The knowledge about the internal sections of the Earth is based on generally seismograph readings, S&P waves, and I forget the name of the other one, but doesn't matter. The fact is, I think the knowledge of the inside of the Earth, though nobody's ever been there or touched it or seen it that has lived to tell about it, I think it's probably correct. I don't argue with them, but it is not based on observation. It is true that there is a plastic-like fluidity to rocks. They are able to move and flow and slide, some under great pressure. But Paul Brown's got the best theory on that, the hydroplate theory. Did you ever find a good copy of that?
There is. Everybody out there listening can go to creationscience.com and watch a 5-minute professionally animated explanation of the entire hydroplate theory. Not the entire thing, but pretty much condensed down into 5 minutes. And yesterday, an evolutionist that I was debating with kept, I couldn't get the guy to have any imagination whatsoever about geology. And I sent him to watch that video, and when he was finished, he was quiet, and he said, this makes so much sense.
Right.
And it really got me fired up. I was like, whoa! You know, this guy was arguing with me for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Watched this little animation, and now he's asking me questions, you know, about things that he doesn't understand. So
I agree. Now, Walt Brown, a PhD in physics, Air Force Academy, teacher, physics teacher, genius, good guy. I disagree with him on a couple minor things. He doesn't have a mechanism of what started the cracks. Why did the Earth break up?
Mm-hmm.
All he says is the Earth broke up and the plates began to slide. You know, I think he's right on all that. But I think combined with my theory of an ice meteor causing that, is the Holman theory has probably got it all. I think we have it all, Jonathan. I think we covered all the bases.
The puzzle is almost complete.
The puzzle is nearly complete. The only part I don't have figured out is why God loves us. If I was God, I would have killed everybody.
Several times.
A long time ago. I wouldn't put up with a man. You. Out of here. So are you guys going to be real thankful I'm not God? I am very thankful that I'm not God. I'm very thankful that he is, and he is merciful and forgiving and loving, and it's wonderful. Well, here's one from Dustin French. Dustin writes in, I'm a creationist and hope that you will be able to help settle an indirect issue on your vehicle. You mentioned Ron Wyatt's possible discovery on Noah's, and that he, Mr. Wyatt, was a good friend. I have recently purchased Mr. Wyatt's presentation of discoveries in which he lays out details for not only Noah's Ark, but claims that he found the Ark of the Covenant. Since he was a good friend, will you please comment on his integrity or lack of it, and or claim of finding the Ark of the Covenant? Thank you, and God bless Dr. French in Tampa, Florida. Well, Dr. French, let's put it in perspective here. I met Ron Wyatt at a seminar when I was speaking in North Carolina. A guy came up to me and said, Mr. Holman, my name is Richard Reeves, and this is Ron Wyatt. He and I work together, and we'd like to invite you over for supper and show you some things. So I went to their house, saw some of their presentation videos, and saw some of the stuff he had, and said, wow, you guys have done some research. They've been in archaeological work for years. That started our friendship. I met with him several times. I spent many hours with Ron, talked with him numerous times. Ron died in 99. He was a nurse anesthesiologist, worked at the hospital putting people to sleep. And he would earn, you know, for surgery, okay? Not like a veterinarian, not working, or what are we talking about? Like a vet, okay, but my dog was sleeping. He was a good guy, a very intelligent man. Ron's partner, Richard, is still a good friend of mine, and he lives just south of Nashville, about 50 miles in Cornersville, Tennessee. If you're going down Interstate 65, get off at exit 27, and on the west side of the interstate is a converted gas station that is a museum now, the Wyatt Museum, where you go to wyattmuseum.com. Contact Richard. He's a very intelligent man, very knowledgeable, was with Ron for years. Okay, bottom line is, to answer your question, Dr. French, I talked to Ron in great detail, and he told me, sitting in his living room, he said, Kent, I know the Bible teaches all liars will have their part in the lake of fire. tell you is the truth. And he said, if you were telling me, I wouldn't believe you. He said, but I'm going to tell you, here's what happened to me. Ron would work as a nurse anesthesiologist, earn a bunch of money, and then he'd take off for a few weeks and go to Israel to dig. He loved archaeology. Some of the skeptics who don't like Ron or who blast him say, well, how could one guy find, you know, eight major things in the Bible, like Noah's Ark, Ark of the Covenant, crossing the Red Sea, et cetera, et cetera. And I will ask him, how much time did you spend over there? They say, well, none. I say, okay, well, then he's more likely to find it than you are. He spent years over there. Plus, I knew Ron well enough to say, if I was God, he's the kind of guy I would let find those things because he wasn't looking for any glory.
Now, I have read a few of Ron's publications and so forth, and he has said that, you know, he really feels that God was leading him to some of these things. You know, God was actually helping him out along the way. So
I believe he was a little flaky on a few things. You know, I can't prove it's wrong, but when he says, you know, angels are talking to him, telling him to go dig here, I've never had an angel talk to me, so I can't say, you know, it's true or not.
But of course, if God is helping you, then the chances of you finding eight of these things is pretty well. I think God would know where they were. So
I think an angel. This guy told me his wife was an angel because she was always up in the air harping about something. That's as close as I can come to that. Anyway, Ron said, I was digging. He said, I was walking with a friend of mine along the northwest side of Jerusalem, and there's an escarpment there, kind of like a cliff, and there's a bus station at the bottom. I've been to the spot. He said, my left arm lifted out and pointed to the base of this cliff, and my voice started speaking. He said, my voice said to my friend, that's Jeremiah's grotto. The Ark of the Covenant is down there.
That's what I read. Yeah. It sounds
strange. Okay, I can't. That doesn't mean it's not true. It just, to me, that's not Baptist, okay? I'm Baptist. That's Baptist. Don't do those kind of things. Right? So, anyway, Ron said he spent the next, I don't know how many years, digging there. He discovered some amazing things. There was an old garbage dump. He dug through all kinds of stuff. He and his two sons and hired people, local people. He'd go out there, dig for a few weeks, and then go back home, earn some money, go back and dig, back and forth for years. He found the place, apparently, where the crucifixion site was, where Jesus was crucified. He found, bottom line is, there's it's called karst topography, K-A-R-S-T. It's just like the rocks are full of holes, they call it, like a sponge. And that's common all over Missouri and Arkansas, karst topography, limestone bits everywhere. He said one of the Arabs that's in there working with him was squeezing through one of these little holes, you know, exploring one of these caves. He came out, said, I quit, and left, and didn't tell him why, would never come back, okay? So Ron, you know, squeezed in there, and he said there was the table of showbread and the Ark of the Covenant and some of the temple furniture that's been missing for 2,600 years. Now, make a long story short, we just have a few minutes left. Ron went back, he went to the Jewish authorities, said, guys, you need to come see what I found, and showed them. They didn't touch it. They learned from us the last time, you know, the guy touched the Ark, unqualified, but God killed him. And it's still there today. It has not moved. I did talk to a guy who came through town here. He stopped several years ago. Neither of you guys were here. But he said, Brother, I love your ministry. I saw your videos. I wanted to meet you. So he stopped here. He plays the harp for a living. He's an incredibly talented person with a harp. He has CDs and videos and travel makes a living just playing harp at concerts and stuff like that. He said, I'm working with the nation of Israel, helping them build and design harps because they're working to get ready to reopen their temple.
There's a lot of things you can actually read about that online. They have almost everything.
Almost everything's ready. I asked him. I said, brother, you're helping them build the harps. He said, yes, I am. He said, we have like, I don't know, 50 or something ready to go for them to, you know, do the harps for the temple. I said, what old temple furniture have they done? He began telling me, oh, yeah, they've done this and this, and they're ready to rebuild the temple. I said, no, what about the Ark of the Covenant? Because I had just talked to Ron, you know, about a year before that. He said, you know, it's strange you would ask that question. He said, I was asking the Jewish authorities just a few weeks ago when I was over there, hey, guys, what about the Ark of the Covenant? And he said they got this little glimmer in their eye and said, well, that's taken care of. Don't worry about it.
Actually, I read somewhere also that, no, I don't know if it's true. I read it. I can't verify it. But they were actually asked if they needed to be up and going, how quickly they could be. And apparently, if they were asked right now, they could be up and going within 48 hours. Have everything. They have all the stuff they need to start, you know.
The red heifer, the ashes of the red heifer, and all that stuff.
They have the priest, you know,
competition. So anyway, Dr. French, you asked about Ron Wyatt. I believe he found it. I cannot prove it. I really do believe. I take a lot of flack, even from good creationist friends who think that I should not even mention Ron Wyatt. They don't like him, therefore I'm not supposed to like him either. I'm sorry they feel that way, and if I ever start working for them, I'll do what they say.
A lot of these people wouldn't even talk to Ron.
They wouldn't even talk to him. No. They're just convinced. Their argument is, how can one man find all that stuff? Well, that's not a good argument. Okay. So, anyway, go to WyattMuseum.com and research it for yourself. Okay, here's the next one. Frank Jolly writes in, regarding Bible codes, has anyone run a search in the book of Enoch? I have no idea, Frank. I would be cautious of the book of Enoch. It appears that the Bible refers to Enoch prophesied. I believe that's in the book of Jude. It says that Enoch, the seventh from Adam, prophesied. People have taken that to mean that Enoch must have written a book. I don't know that it really means that, but it might. Let's assume that it does. The Bible tells us Enoch wrote a book. We'll start with that assumption. That doesn't mean we have the book. It doesn't mean it's inspired of God, even just because Enoch wrote a book. I mean, even if Moses wrote a book, other than the, you know, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, that doesn't mean they're inspired. I think God inspired those four. He may have written others that are simply not inspired. So, there is a book floating around called the Book of Enoch. It appears that the Catholic Church had some priests write that book in a monastery someplace a few hundred years ago. And in order to put some of the doctrines of the Catholic Church into circulation and give them a scriptural flavor. And so, it says in the Book of Enoch, you're supposed to do whatever. Okay? I don't think I would trust the Book of Enoch any further than I could throw this house. There is a Book of Jasher floating around. We sell it, actually. You can sit by it on our website. That may be the same thing. It may indeed be a forgery, or it may be the actual Book of Jasher that's mentioned in Samuel, 1 Samuel, and in, I believe, Joshua or Judges mentions the Book of Jasher. So, and I saw it we sent it with a disclaimer. We don't know that this is the one mentioned in the Bible, but it sure is interesting reading. Hope that helps. Can't help any more on that one. Here's another one from Andy Ambroyle, A-M-B-R-I-O-L-E. Andy says, hello, I'm currently taking biology in high school. We're going to do a whole unit on evolution in a few weeks, and I've been watching some of your video, so I'll know how and what to say to my evolutionist teacher when he brings up some of the downright lies. I've looked ahead in my textbook, and a lot of the lies that are in your video number 4 are in my book. Please pray that I might impact one of my classmates to be saved or prevent someone from losing their faith. Anyway, I do have a question for you. The other day in class, we were talking about genetics and DNA. My teacher was saying that when DNA unwinds and transcribes RNA, some parts of the DNA are left out. I think the words he used were intron and exons, or something like that. Anyway, he was saying how some people were born with a tail, and how having a tail was in our DNA. Well, John, you just gave me an article about that.
I did. I was looking at this up. I have a book called Vestigial Organs, in quotes, Are Fully Functional by Gary Bergman, Ph.D., and George Howe, Ph.D., which they can get on the Answers in Genesis website. And they actually covered this whole tail issue. It's called a caudal appendage. And if you go to ananova.com or something to that effect,
yeah, ananova.com. How do you spell ananova?
A-N-A-N-O-V-A.
Ananova, okay.
There was an article in the year 2004, this month, actually, on the 8th, which is today.
Wow. You're up to date, Jonathan.
Okay. It says, baby with tail, reincarnation of Hindu god. A baby was actually born with one of these, and it's not a tail. You can read the book, and it doesn't explain.
It's a tiny tumor.
Yeah. The, it says, baby with tail, reincarnation of Hindu god. They were actually worshiping this baby. And then today, later on, another article comes up, says, Dr. Spear, baby with tail may not live long because they're talking about they're talking about the baby probably has a tumor and some serious spinal injuries and
can you give me those pictures from my PowerPoint presentation? You can look at the internet, you know.
Yeah.
Give them a color.
I sure can. So this is not anything any evolutionists would want. I mean, you can go through the book. It's also available online. If you go to the internet and type in vestigial organs are fully functional on Google, that specific chapter is
actually. We're going to order the book for our bookstore. So people just, if you want one, call us. You know what it costs?
This is about $12.
$12. We'll probably sell it cheaper than that because everything they sell is a lot more expensive. So we'll sell it cheaper, whatever our cost is. It'll be. So assume, you know, if I'm picking a number, say $10, probably we'll sell it for whatever our cost is. We'll find out. Nature, it says that some of the DNA is left out, proving man used to have a tail, proving we evolved from monkeys. The teacher is confused about his anatomy and biology, or is deliberately lying to you. Mm-hmm. It's not true either way. But we assume the teacher is just confused, and that's all they've been taught, so they believe it.
Okay, these occurrences, there are never any bones, there's never any cartilage built up or any cartilage material in these. It's just a piece of fatty flap.
Right.
And the guy who actually, Ledley is his name, who actually first discovered this, or not discovered, but first documented it scientifically, says this could be just anything, just a mutation. I mean, we have Annie who organized all these books here. When she was born, she had six fingers. I saw an x-ray in your office of the guy with six fully formed fingers.
Sure.
See, these evolutionists saying, we came from six-fingered creatures.
Right.
It's only when a convenient, nasty mutation happens, they start using that.
Yeah. Let me finish Andy's.
Are we got enough time?
Yeah,
20 minutes.
Are you sure? You checked the clock up there, so okay. Andy says, the instructions for his teacher said the instructions for a tail are left out, and because when we evolved from monkeys, we no longer need tails anymore. He said it's a very common genetic disorder, but I have never even heard of a human with a tail. Nor do I believe any of his evolution. Have you ever heard of people with tails? If this is true, how is it possible to have a tail? Why should I see if he brings it up again? Thanks for your help, Andy. Well, Andy, here's the book Jonathan referred to. Call our website at Twitter, or it's Dr. Dino. And order that. We will have some in stock here in the next couple of weeks. We'll get it. But it's not true. Now, I cover that in video number 4 of my series about the tail. We do have a tailbone, 9 little muscles attached to the tailbone. And I tell people, if you think the tailbone is vestigial, I will pay to have yours removed. Bent over.
That's how far no takers.
Me and the Swiss Army, I know we can do it in 20 minutes. I'm thinking 15 if I got good at it. We can fix that. Anybody thinks the tailbone is vestigial does not understand their basic anatomy. Check Gray's anatomy and figure it out. Okay. Time for one more. We'll try. This is a long one. No time for this one. I'll try. William Holland writes in. Dr. Roman, first I want to say I love your ministry. It's been a great help for myself and others. I do have a few questions. First, the sun was greater than day 4, so there doesn't appear to be any real way of telling how long a day was before day 4. Oh, Andy, let me stop. William, let me stop right there. I said, that's not correct. A day is one spin of the earth in relation to anything. Our day starts at midnight. The sun's not even out. Okay. The day can start and stop. The sun is unrelated to that. It's a spin of the earth in relation to anything. The Bible says God is light, and so the days, also, you can look at Exodus 20:11 and Exodus 31:17, I believe, where it says, in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, so you're supposed to work 6 days and rest one. He's talking about the Sabbath. Now, it's quite obvious in those verses he includes all 6 days as being the same. So the argument that the first 3 days had no sun, therefore they could have been longer, that argument is fatally flawed and unnecessary. We don't need billions of years. It was 6 days, and they're all the same. Quite a few references to that in Scripture. Plus, there are many times where it says God rested on the seventh day.
There were many things. There were many things in day 5 that were dependent on the sun, weren't there?
Well, the plants made on day 3.
Day 3. So, you have plants on one day.
So
you kind of need that sun.
You need that relatively quick day, like the next day,
Yes, sir.
Okay. Secondly, you mentioned in your tapes dragons. Understandably, these are dinosaurs. We also talk about fire breathing. Time to quit.
Yep.
Rats. Okay, well, folks, we'll take up here with William's question tomorrow. Join us tomorrow, my granddaughter's first birthday. See you then. Thanks a lot. Bye.